Welcome to episode 18 of the She's Off Script podcast. Today, we're kicking off a three-episode series on the business of travel influence. We learn from the experiences of three women at three different stages in life that have built successful travel empires. For the first time on this podcast, we'll be releasing three episodes in one day. So don't forget to check out episodes 17, 18, and 19 to hear from all three women. But before we dive in, I would love it if you would head over to Instagram and share a screenshot of this episode on your stories and let me know your favorite gems from all three episodes. Tag me at She's Off Script and add the She's Off Script hashtag so I can share on my stories as well. Okay, let's dive into today's episode.
I was putting out YouTube videos really often, and the people at Travel Channel ended up stumbling upon some of my content.
The second woman in today's three-episode series is Onika Raymond, a multi-hyphenate entrepreneur who at the age of 34 left her decade-long teaching career to launch her own travel media empire.
They have to think to themselves, well, why would someone want to hire me? Why would someone want to follow me? Why would someone want to buy my product?
For Onika, content is king. She gave herself a year to successfully break into the travel industry, and then got noticed by putting out great content. 2 years later, she appears on TV regularly, hosts two Travel Channel web series, and so much more.
I won't get on a plane for you unless you are paying me X amount, because my time is money, my effort is worth money. This week, for example, I turned down three different gigs, and I felt comfortable in doing so because I thought, well, you know what? Not doing that project frees me up to do something even better.
Join us as we go off script with Onika Raymond, the face of the travel media brand, Onika the Traveler. Onika Raymond, welcome to She's Off Script.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
First off, congratulations are in order, I think, for the start of your fourth season of the Travel Channel web series, Big City, Little Budget.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Of course. For those of our listeners that haven't come across you before, could you share who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Onika Raymond, and I'm a bit of a multi-hyphenate. So I do a number of things. I am a media personality. I am a multimedia journalist. I'm a blogger. I'm a public speaker. But mostly I create content within the travel space. So in a variety of formats. I host a couple of web series for Travel Channel, and I do a lot of my own sort of things on my various platforms, including my blog, which is called Onika the Traveler.
I recently saw a post you had put out there on Instagram where you said, I put in the work and shot and produced and hosted and edited dozens of videos chronicling my travels around the world before you got where you are now.
Absolutely.
And so what does putting in the work look like for you?
Putting in the work means establishing yourself so that when these opportunities come to you, or when you seek out these opportunities, you have a portfolio or you have a body of work that you can show your skill set. You have something concrete and something tangible that you can show to prospective partners or even fans or people who are going to follow you. I think what is really symptomatic in this current climate and industry, especially as online content creation has grown and exploded, I think we see a lot of people who think to themselves, oh, well, you know what? I want to ditch my 9-to-5 and I want to become an influencer. And they think that's just going to happen like that. They don't realize that a lot of the people that they see currently who are really successful now have put in a lot of work. So they're basically meeting these people at chapter 20, but they haven't followed along or they haven't read chapters 1 through 19. And what I really try to do, without being preachy, I try to show that, you know what, I've been in the game for a really long time. And everything I currently have, any success that you see me promote, that is really the result of a really long grind and a long time being in the game and a body of work that spans over a decade, really.
Now, I really appreciate that you do share that, because with the gram just being this highlight reel, people do not realize specifically what you're saying. So sure. When you first
transitioned out of your teaching profession, which I do want to touch on as well, you gave yourself a year to make this dream a reality. How many doors did you have to knock on before you started seeing some wins?
So here's the thing. I am a very pragmatic person. I come from an immigrant family. My family's Jamaican. And when I decided to leave my 10-year teaching career, I was already in my 30s. So I wasn't a spring chicken. And So being someone who's very pragmatic, someone who comes from an immigrant family where, you know, work ethic is really paramount, I knew that, and also being the age that I was, I mean, I knew that I didn't really have time nor the inclination to dilly-dally. And so I thought to myself, well, you know what? I'm going to leave this really stable job that I have. I'm going to leave this niche and this career that I built for myself. I'm going to leave this really great income, stable income and benefits that I've accrued to step out on my own and to be daring and to try this thing. But I didn't want to flounder. And I thought that if I gave myself a time limit, if I gave myself some sort of target, some sort of countdown, that I could be way more efficient in this creative endeavor. So I gave myself a year. And because that sort of pressure, that time pressure was on to succeed, it really meant that I was out there. I was creating content like all the time. I was sending pitch decks and pitch letters to prospective partners. I was really trying to show off my work, and I was trying to create content that I knew would resonate with my audience and I knew would help me grow, and content that I knew would gain the attention of partners that I wanted to work with in the future. So I think that that sense of urgency really propelled me forward and really allowed me to discern what it was that I really wanted in this space and in this industry, and what I really wanted my, I guess, new career to look like.
Being a writer, travel content producer, influence so much. So you're just a multi-hyphenate entrepreneur at this point. What was your strategy behind creating this portfolio that is the Anika Raymond brand? When you first started, as opposed to what it is now, how has it evolved over time?
So basically, when I started blogging in about 2005, and I blogged intermittently from about 2005 to 2009, I had a blog. It was called Nikita Does France. And essentially, there was no brand. I was writing because I was living abroad. It was my second year living in France, and I simply wanted to find a way to keep in touch with friends and family and to keep them updated as to my adventures internationally. The travel space then was not what it looks like now, not at all. And as well, you know, being a Black female who was living abroad, I mean, it wasn't as common as it was now. I think there's so much more access and there's so much more information that people of all races and colors and creeds and religions and whatnot, they're way more mobile than they were in the past. And so I was living in France. The first year I went to France, I was doing a study abroad as part of my university. So I studied at a French university for 1 year. And the second year I was in France, I actually returned and I was teaching English at a school. And that was one of the few avenues that you had back in the day to go and live abroad and make money and somehow sustain yourself. So anyway, I started this blog to keep friends and family abreast of my international adventures. And so there really was no brand. It was simply telling stories. It was like, this is what I did. Here are some pictures. And that's about it. Now, the brand Onika the Traveler didn't evolve or didn't come to be until I moved to London in 2011. And at that point, I had had a number of years overseas. I had lived in France. I had lived in Mexico by that time. And I had even done a stint in Hong Kong. And over those years, over the, I guess it would have been 6 or 7 or so years that I was blogging, you know, relatively intermittently at first, and then with a greater frequency in those latter years, I, you know, really realized that I had an audience that wasn't just friends and family. So I had people who had stumbled upon my content some way, somehow. And they're really interested, not only in my personal story, but also interested in finding out how to do what I was doing. And so from that standpoint, Onigo the Traveler, that brand evolved because I wanted to then educate people about how they could live abroad. I wanted to tell them about my experiences, particularly as a Black female living abroad and traveling abroad. And I just wanted to create resources that could help people. So that, I guess, that type of content or that type of spin or that branding, that didn't happen until about 2011. But up until then, you know, the 6-7 years before then, I was just doing it purely for fun and purely for, you know, to keep friends and family kind of updated about what I was doing.
Now, fast forward to today, you have a literary agent, you are appearing more and more on television. So how did those pieces get incorporated into your brand?
It's funny because it was organic and it wasn't organic. I think that my brand works, especially in this current landscape, because it's fairly authentic. I mean, I didn't come onto the scene hoping to do what I'm doing today. It started out of a love of travel. It started out of a love of education and a need to connect and communicate with people through the internet, basically. And I gained, I guess, a followership and a readership through that because people felt connected to me, because people wanted information, because people wanted support for their travel endeavors, I guess. And so when I really decided I was going to change careers and when I decided I was going to leave the teaching profession and when I decided that I wanted to work full-time in media, luckily, because I already had this body of work and because I was constantly working with different partners who I often sought out myself because I was pitching them, all these other sorts of things kind of fell into my lap, like the media appearances on TV, the literary agent. It was because of all of this output, all of this content creation, that they ended up finding me and presenting me with these opportunities. You know, I was putting out YouTube videos really often, and the people at Travel Channel ended up stumbling upon some of my online content.
Interesting.
And it was the same thing for some of the TV. The TV appearances that I do, the regular TV appearances, people were finding me, you know, these producers were finding my content online. And so if I wasn't producing all of this stuff, if I wasn't putting out all of this content, then they just wouldn't have found me. And I don't know,
a good point.
I necessarily would have had the resources to find them to seek them out myself. So yeah, that's why I kind of say that it was organic in a way and it wasn't. The need and the desire to create was really organic. But once I started putting myself out there and once I started kind of, I guess, honing my content so that it was useful to others, that was when Literary Agent happened. That was when Travel Channel came calling. That was when some of my other TV spots or gigs started to kind of reach out to me and become a reality.
Speaking about honing your content, I love how open you are about your experiences online, your experiences just moving through the world as a Black woman, and especially when you're traveling with your husband, who happens to be a white man. Yeah. So how has your approach or your reaction to what appears to be just racially driven, just micro events when you're traveling, how's your reaction to those changed over time?
You know what? I don't know that they've necessarily changed. I think that I've always been pretty reflective. I've always been really conscious of who I am and how I move about the world and how I'm perceived as I move about the world. I grew up in Toronto, Canada, which is a very multicultural city. And it is a city that really celebrates diversity. So from very young, I was surrounded by lots of different people from different walks of life who represented different nationalities and who spoke different languages and so on and so forth. And I think that's kind of what first ignited my passion for travel or my desire to see the world, essentially. Because in Toronto, the world or a microcosm of the world was there. And so I've always been hyper aware of being a Black woman of Caribbean heritage who grew up in Canada and now travels all over the place. In terms of the reactions that I receive, I mean, definitely the first time I went overseas, when I went to France in 2003 and started traveling to places like Morocco and Italy and Spain in those earlier times, the reactions that I received then are quite different from the ones I receive now, because at the time there weren't as many Black females like myself traveling in that capacity. And now that's changed immensely with more time, with more education about traveling, with more access or greater access. So yeah, I think that a lot of the topics that I talk about now, it's funny, a lot of these things, a lot of these reactions or what have you, a lot of these epiphanies, I came to these epiphanies 15 years ago, but there wasn't an appetite for that sort of content, or I didn't have that many people asking me. But now, since there's such a renaissance and the dawning of what they call the Black travel movement, because that's occurred, I find so many more people having those epiphanies now and wanting to talk about them and discuss them. And so I kind of like putting content out there that brings these topics to light. And I love being able to use my own experiences as a Black woman who travels on her own, but is also often in the company of a white man that I happen to be married to. I love bringing those experiences to light so that we can discuss those topics on my platforms.
So you've been known to tackle some fairly controversial topics head on, even in your Instagram captions. I mean, sure, you essentially write blog posts in those captions, and I appreciate that. Although sometimes people are on Instagram for beautiful pictures, and so they probably just like and keep it moving as opposed to engage with that content. But I will say, you have developed a very engaged audience who does actually come back on your posts and or your captions and give you some fairly well thought out feedback. Mm-hmm. And so first, how did you create that community around your brand? And second, how did you find your voice in order to navigate those conversations with such finesse?
I really appreciate you saying that. Firstly, I think the evolution of the way we consume content it has evolved rapidly since the age of the smartphone. When I think back to 2005, I barely had access to a computer. I would go to my ex-boyfriend's house in France. He had a desktop computer to write blog posts, or alternatively, I would go to an internet cafe because I did not have my own computer when I was living in France. And so I didn't have access to the internet. Fast forward to now, 14, 15 years later, and we have all this information at our fingertips. Studies show that most people, when they navigate the World Wide Web, they're doing so from their handheld device. And so we've also seen a shift in blog readership versus social media use. So once upon a time, I used to write these elaborate 1500 word blog posts, you know, delving into topics, and the comments section would be lit. You know, we had so many people really going back and forth, debating in comments and so on and so forth. And it was, I guess that was where communities were created. But now we've seen this shift, and all of this have kind of moved to social media. And so I guess I've tried to weather that change, and I go where the people are. So people are on social media, whether people are there for the captions or whether they're there for the pretty photos, I try to provide both. I always say that I put the cute picture to rope you in and then hope that you stick around and read the caption. And I hope that you end up engaging with the content. With regards to, I guess, navigating controversial topics, I think a lot of it is a personality thing. I'm somebody who's very open. I'm someone who's very outspoken. Anybody knows me in real life would be able to vouch for that. And I always am up for a good debate. And it doesn't bother me to be wrong. And it doesn't bother me to talk about things that are incendiary. I am not afraid of conflict. I'm not afraid of contention. And I think that often when we have both of those things, that's when real conversations happen. And that's when real change can occur. So I quite like kind of having these sorts of debates. So it doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't scare me at all to talk about certain things. I'm not reticent to broach certain topics. I always just make sure that when I'm writing something or when I'm posting something, I try to reflect on it and I try to ensure that whatever I say, whatever my opinion is relatively judicious and it's expressed in a really graceful, articulate way. I think that's what I spend my time on. I don't want to be like, this is stupid because I think so. Instead, I will rephrase and I will say, I don't like this, or I don't think this is fair because of A, B, and C. And these are all things that I've researched long before I put pen to paper. Mm-hmm. So I think that is kind of my modus operandi in terms of navigating topics that are perhaps a little bit more contentious.
You brought up an interesting point about people migrating away from blogs, perhaps, and moving more onto social media platforms. Mm-hmm. So as someone who does have a significant presence on social media and probably does have business that's driven from that presence, mm-hmm. how are you thinking about the notion that you are building a business on someone else's property and that you should probably have a piece of online property that you call your own in case, God forbid, Instagram goes away? So how do you think through that to ensure the longevity of your business?
Mm-hmm. I think that as a business owner, you always should be, or as an entrepreneur, I think you should always be thinking about multiple income streams. I think that you should always have multiple platforms, especially if you're working in the digital space. I think it's really necessary to have different baskets and to not put all of your eggs into one basket. And it's something that a lot of us OGs in the space preach to some of the new people coming up. So for myself, I mean, I'm everywhere. And sometimes it's not the most efficient way to do things. And being a jack of all trades kind of means that you're a master of none. But I've set myself up in a way that, well, if Instagram was to disappear tomorrow, oh well, that's unfortunate. A lot of my income nowadays, all of the business I have comes from there. But that's not all I am. And so I host, I write on my website, I write articles for other websites and other print publications. I am a photographer. I am a public speaker. I can edit video in a pinch. I have this diverse skill set that supersedes Instagram. And I was around before Instagram and I'll be around after it. And I think that any smart or intelligent business owner will recognize that a lot of these platforms and whatnot are ephemeral, and that in order to survive in business, in any business, you have to be able to pivot and evolve.
And it sounds like you've really set yourself up to do just that, sure. Regardless of what comes down the road.
Absolutely.
For anyone that's looking to get into the space where you are now and essentially be you in the near future, what would you recommend they do as far as setting up their portfolio of streams of revenue? If I was starting today, what would you recommend I start with? And what should I build up to within that year timeframe?
I think that the two most important things is to have your own digital space that you actually own and manage. So i.e. your own website, because that will be your portfolio, and that's something that nobody can ever take away from you. And then I would encourage that same person to be really active on social media and use social media to their advantage. If you work in an industry like myself that is really driven by working with diverse partners, then you need both components. You need to be able to have an online space where people can come and find you and where you can post your work and so on and so forth. And you also need to be active and savvy on social media so that you can reach out to prospective partners and companies and so on that you are interested in connecting with or working with eventually. So I think those are two really crucial parts of the game if you want to kind of get into it. And also, I think it's really important to create content. Nobody's going to hire you. Because, I mean, keep in mind that you are the talent and you have to be able to output. And at least in the beginning, you have to be able to demonstrate to prospective partners that you can do things. And you don't have a portfolio because you haven't had the opportunity to work with others, then you need to create your own content. So that is something that I really am a fierce advocate for. Is creating a bunch of content that can show your skill set and also content that will resonate with whatever audience you've kind of pinpointed, with whatever niche, I guess, you've decided to target.
That's really helpful advice. Once again, going back to the earlier comment about not trying to start at someone's day 100, but if you're starting today, here are probably the most crucial things you need to focus on.
Yeah. You have to crawl before you can walk.
Absolutely.
And you really have to create content. I mean, the thing that I always tell people is they have to think to themselves, well, why would someone want to hire me? Why would someone want to follow me? Why would someone want to buy my product? And you have to tap into a need, a want, a desire. And you have to create something that resonates with people, something that they think is good, or else they're not going to solicit you for anything. They're not going to engage. They're not going to purchase. They're not going to click subscribe.
Absolutely. So. Today, having described everything it is that you work on, what does the typical day look like for you? And I think for you, you may have to tell us what does the typical day over the course of a month look like for you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really difficult to say just because my travel schedule is so hectic. And a lot of what I do is kind of based around where I am at the current moment or where I'm traveling. But I will say that basically every day involves my computer. and usually I am creating content. I don't have a schedule. My travel schedule basically makes that impossible. So I could never say, okay, well, at 9 a.m., I'm going to get up, I'm going to answer emails until 11 a.m. Doesn't work because, for example, exactly a week ago, I was in Paris. So I was ahead of my regular time zone by 6 hours. And so it's just really difficult to anticipate. But one of the things that I'm usually doing any day of the week is creating some sort of content. So whether it's shooting, whether it's taking photos or writing something for a client or doing or getting approvals or content that I've already created in the past, there's a lot of back and forth just because a lot of what I'm doing these days is so client driven. I'm creating content for clients on a constant basis. And thus that requires a lot of liaising with the people who are hiring me to get approvals, to give them first drafts. I mean, there's a lot of administrative work, and I think that people who are not in this industry are not necessarily aware of all of the admin that goes on behind the scenes, especially if you're working with a sponsor or a partner. The reshoots and the revisions and all of that that needs to be done, the location releases that need to be secured. You know, if somebody's taking a picture of the Eiffel Tower. Well, it's not a good example, but something you may need to have permission in order to broadcast that picture. So there's a lot of things kind of going on behind the scenes and a lot of administrative tasks that take up a lot of my day.
Could you pull back the curtain a little bit more for us there and perhaps walk us through how it is that you are getting so much revenue from Instagram as a platform? Walk us through from actually pitching a partner all the way through delivering the content for them. Yeah. What does that look like?
Well, honestly, I have been really blessed in that I haven't had to pitch anyone in probably like 2 or 3 years now.
Amazing.
I would say probably like 99% of what I do is inbound. And again, I think what that comes from is that year where I hustled really hard and I created a lot of content and, mm-hmm. you know, I accepted every interview that came my way. I was just really on the ball when it came to stuff like that. And so my name was everywhere. And I've been able to reap the benefits, and that's, you know, over the years now, I've been in a really great position where I wake up to pitches in my inbox rather than having to pitch anybody. So essentially, I will wake up, I will get some sort of email. Somebody will say, oh, can we get on a call? Or sometimes in the body of the email, they will pitch the project directly and say, are you interested? We will negotiate terms, rates, fees, content, you know, the deliverables. And then typically what happens is that there are dates established for when the deliverables need to be completed and dates for drafts. So, I mean, it varies with whatever, it varies depending on the company, but usually there's a back and forth. A lot of the time I need to travel to create that content. So if I'm working with a destination partner, for example, they fly me out to whatever the destination is, and I'm commissioned to write 2 articles for their website and produce like 4 images on Instagram. So I go to that destination and I collect that content. And then when I come back home, or, you know, after a mutually agreed upon amount of time, then I'll send them the first drafts of the content and we'll go back and forth and agree on when the content is going to be put out and all of that sort of stuff. So that's basically how it works. Typically, I'm pitched with a project. I decide whether or not I want to do it and under which terms. And then I create the content and then seek approval from that partner. And then the content goes out. So whether it's put up on my platforms or on their platforms, there are many steps to creation, approval, and posting. But yeah, that's basically how it works in this landscape of working with partners who are primarily, I guess, invested in creating editorial content for online consumption and also social media content.
Anika, there's only one of you, and it looks like, or it sounds like, that's very time and labor intensive just produce that quality content.
Sure.
How do you think about scaling that side of your business?
Well, here's the thing. I think my business is my personality at the end of the day. So my overarching thing is that I am a media personality. And so I don't sell a product. I don't, at this current moment, I don't have any interest in selling a travel pillow or anything. That's not my thing. I'm not really in the business of that. And in terms of scale, I mean, one of the things I think about is perhaps like affiliate income. One of my income streams is not through affiliates, but definitely through like ads on my website. So that's something that that can be scaled. Or that's something that is scalable. But basically, I'm talent. I host, I create content, and all of that content that I create has me embedded in it. It's not nameless, it's not faceless. So I think that probably you, as a business owner, you have to decide who or what, or I guess what avenue or what path you're going to take, whether or not you want to create some sort of course, or you want to sell some sort of product, or whether what you want to actually sell is your personality or your talent. I mean, it's kind of like asking Regina King, how does she scale? She's only one person. Well, she's an actress. Mm-hmm. So she does a project and she moves on. She does another project. It's not something that she can farm out to somebody else, because what she's selling and what she's being hired for is her talent and her personality.
Absolutely. So it sounds like if you're looking to scale from a revenue perspective, you know, keeping in mind that we're talking about an online personality here, is you have to charge more. And I think oftentimes women kind of battle with how much to charge and struggle with undercutting themselves a little bit. So how do you think about charging? And have you ever felt like you couldn't charge as much as you should have?
Mm-hmm. I think that it's a learning process. I think that you never know how much you can charge until you really ask and you push those limits. And for myself, I have, over the years of working in the industry, I have become very, I don't know what the proper word is, but it doesn't scare me to ask for what I believe I am owed. I definitely have a figure. It's so funny. I tell some of my colleagues that I have I won't get out of bed for this dollar amount. that's like
the was it Janice something or another, the model who said she wouldn't.
Oh, she wouldn't get out of bed for less than $2,000 a day or something like mm-hmm. that. I definitely have one of those figures. I won't get on a plane for you unless you are paying me X amount, because my time is money. My effort is worth money. And I never want to do something, or actually the moment I sign on to do something, it's always in my mind at the opportunity cost of doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, for example, I turned down like 3 different gigs because they weren't paying me enough, because they wanted too much of a time investment. Because the terms did not work out for me. And I felt comfortable in doing so because I thought, well, you know what? Not doing that project frees me up to do something even better, something that pays me more, something that fulfills me more, something that is a better use of my time. And so I think that in this landscape, you have to be confident in your abilities and you have to get really comfortable with saying no. And this year in particular, in 2019, one of my personal credos is to work smarter and not harder, which means Amen. Like, if you don't pay me this, I'm sorry, we cannot partner. And that's just something that I think, you know, to go back to your previous question about scaling, you're absolutely right. That's how you end up scaling. If you can make more money on projects that require less of your time,
mm-hmm.
that means that you can take on additional projects and bring in additional revenue. So I always say that I would rather do, you know, 5 projects that, I don't know, I guess I would rather do 1 project that pays $5 than 5 projects that pay $1. Let's put it that way.
That absolutely makes sense. Speaking of doing projects that fulfill you, I have to imagine traveling and being in all these engagements, it takes a toll on you physically, sure. mentally. And so how do you take care of yourself just to make sure that you live another day to fulfill more of your dream?
Oh my goodness. I am a huge proponent of self-care. I didn't do that well with self-care last year because I was running around doing all of the things. But one of the things I enjoy, especially when I am at home in New York, is I love going for a massage, and I'll probably do that later on this afternoon. And I really appreciate stillness. So for someone who travels as much as myself, I really, really, really put a value on being still. So a lot of time in New York, I'm not out in these New York streets. I'm at home. I'm at the massage place. I'm at the coffee place. I take things slow and I relish my time and I love being alone. I relish my personal space. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to come back to center myself.
So from a personal standpoint, how do you balance your rigorous travel schedule, you know, the need to have a little bit of time to yourself, and then also the fact that you do have a husband at home? Mm-hmm. How are you balancing that relationship aspect of your life?
Honestly, it is a constant balance. I'm lucky in that at least last year, my husband was able to travel with me on assignments a fair bit. Nice. He worked in an industry, well, completely separate from my own. He actually works in investment banking. But because of the way, you know, the corporation is set up, he's able to, you know, he has quite a bit of vacation time. And so was able to take that vacation time to come with me on various projects and help me out and to be a manager of sorts. So we end up traveling at least a lot. We end up traveling together a lot for my work projects. In terms of trying to like kind of manage my time and my free time and so on and so forth, I am also where I have also become really ruthless when it comes to negotiating the length of assignments. So if I'm doing an assignment, if I'm working with a destination partner, for example, and they need me to fly to Los Angeles, I'm there for like the minimum amount of time I need to be there for. Like, I'm not lingering. I'm not, you know, I have been known to fly somewhere and come back the same day because I'm not interested in sleeping over because that's not my time. I would rather be home. So I've become really, I'm kind of like, okay, well, you know what? I'm really efficient. I see that you have me scheduled for 4 days. I can actually do this in 2.5. Are you on board? Can we work this out?
And once again, stating exactly what it is you want.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And you know what? That's kind of lost me. That may have lost me some work or what have you. That may have lost me some opportunities, but I mean, it's necessary for my sanity. And I never want to do an assignment, or I never want to do something where I feel as though I've been taken advantage of, because that's happened to me in the beginning and it's not a great feeling. So I vowed to be true to myself and to make sure that I am the number one priority in all of my business dealings.
I love that. Onika, we can't let you go without asking for travel tips from you. So for any of the women out there who have heard all about your adventures and see it on the gram, could you give us 5 tips for them if they want to go on a solo adventure of their own?
Sure. So if you want to go on a solo adventure and you're a little bit reluctant because you've never traveled solo before, I would definitely say research is key. I would say to use your online connections to discuss any concerns that you have with people online. There are so many different like groups and so on and so forth that you can kind of connect with other Black solo traveling women. So use your online resources as well. Sign up for a walking tour. Like once you get to your destination, it's a really good way to not only discover the city you're in, but also to potentially make a few friends and role dogs that you can kind of hang out with. Like, you know, on the duration of your trip. I would say to not overpack. One of the reasons I say this is because you probably will end up buying a lot of things at your destination and you don't want to be limited by the fact that you brought all your other stuff. And finally, I would say to never compromise your safety to save a dollar or to prove a point. Make sure that your safety is really your utmost priority. If you are going somewhere and you want to go out, don't go out late at night, or don't, you know, be walking in the street late at night. Make sure that you secure like transportation. Cool it with the alcohol if you're traveling on your own as well, because you don't want to kind of leave yourself vulnerable to like nefarious people. So there are many more tips that I've actually written about and done a YouTube video about, actually. But those are five of the ones that I thought of off the top of my head.
Great. And so now that you've really come into your own, what's next for you?
Oh my goodness. That's what I'm still trying to figure out, to be honest. I definitely want to do more storytelling. I want to do more production. So now that I work in the, I guess, on-air kind of space. And I've been in a number of productions where I myself have been hosting and I've been the talent. I would love to produce more stories about other people and stories where I'm not necessarily a part of the story. So we will see. 2019 is sure to hold a number of possibilities, and I'm just trying to kind of sort that out and see what it brings, see what the year brings.
So we'll be looking out for that. Given the caliber of work you've already put out, we can only expect a little bit more from you this year.
I hope so.
How can people find you now that they've heard about all the great work you're doing?
Oh my goodness. Well, I will tell them. Let me plug my gram a little bit.
Please do.
Find me on Instagram. I am at Onika Traveler, and that's two L's because I grew up in Canada. So that is at Onikatraveller. And from there, if you follow me on there, you'll be able to kind of find all of my other stuff on other platforms.
Sounds great. Onika, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a great, great conversation.
I'm so glad you made it to the end of today's episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and write us a review. As always, don't forget to share this episode with your friends, family, colleagues, anyone who cares to listen. We'll talk to you next time.